Okay, guys, so I'm going to go through the next chapter, which is applied animal genetics. It's on page 335 of your books. So this chapter is very similar to the last chapter. So the last chapter was referring specifically to plant genetics. This one's going through animal genetics. So I'll basically talk through each one of the sections and then tell you what to underline. So the first thing on 335 is talking about physical traits, and they're basically saying that some physical traits are desirable whilst others are undesirable. So for example, an animal having horns on the top of his head would be undesirable. The idea behind that is for safety. Obviously, if they have horns on top of their head, they could spear another animal or hurt another animal, or also they could cause physical harm to the farmer or to people that are walking through the farm. So one of the ideas would be that usually what happens, we remove the horn using a dehorner, which is basically like a hot tool that you press against the cells on the top of the head where the horn usually grows from. And the idea being that it basically kills off all of the cells that the horn would usually grow from. Okay. A way around that is to basically have animals that do not have the gene to produce the horn on the top of their head. So Angus, Aberdeen Angus, are cattle that are actually naturally polled. So that term, to be naturally polled, means that they don't have any horns to begin with on their head, which means that we don't need to worry about dehorning them. Okay, so that's an example of where we can select an animal based on its traits and then breed from it, because that then would reduce the amount of work that we would have to do on the farm, because then you wouldn't have to dehorn the animals. So on 335, under physical traits, third line down, underline Aberdeen Angus cattle. And then the next line, they have the gene for the polled condition is dominant over the gene for the presence of horns. When a naturally polled animal is crossed with a naturally or with a horned cattle breed, all the offspring will be polled. So the advantage as offspring from the Angus do not require dehorning. So it basically shows you the example there on the next page. So an example of one animal that has horns, one animal that does not have horns. When we cross them, it produces an animal that doesn't have horns, and that's advantageous. Okay, so that's something that we could select for. We could use selective breeding to choose to cross an animal with an Angus so that we know then that they're not going to produce any horns. Equally, another trait that we might be talking about is double muscling. So some animals are going to be prone to having extra muscle on their bodies. They're the continental breeds, things like Belgian Blue or Charolais. So the idea with the inheritance of double muscle, again, it's a gene, it's a mutation of a gene, and it basically causes excess muscle to be built on the animal. So you could have these animals going up to 1,000 kgs in weight. A lot of them would be show breeds. Now, there's advantages and disadvantages to these. The advantage being that obviously you're producing a large amount of meat on the animal. So in terms of its production, you're going to have a huge amount of meat on the animal. And then you only have to take care of the one animal as opposed to having maybe two animals for the same amount of meat on a different animal. So it is advantageous in that way, but there's disadvantages of it as well. So say, for example, when they're being born, the animal usually has to be born by cesarean section. So the idea being they're going to be very large. So we know a normal animal at birth is going to weigh about 40 kilos for a calf. Double muscle would be much larger. And so it means they have to be born by cesarean section. So they'll have to be removed by cesarean. And that obviously has added complications, because it means that you have to have a vet on site to be able to do the operation. Okay, so mark on page 336, third line down, Belgian Blues have a mutation of this gene, causes greater muscle growth in the phenotype of the animal, commonly referred to as double muscling. Skip a line. They produce very lean meat and have a higher meat yield with lower levels of intramuscular fat compared to other beef breeds. Now, the idea of having less fat is advantageous because as a customer, as a consumer, people naturally pick animals that don't have as much fat. So if you think, if you went to get a cut of meat inside in the butchers and there was two pieces left, one had a lot of fat on it, one had very little fat, you'd naturally select the one without fat. And so that's why it's advantageous in the animals as well if they're growing low levels or lean meat, basically. Then underline, however, there are several well-documented undesirable risks with this breed, like smaller internal organs, like heart and lungs, increased risk of respiratory diseases, and fatigue easily with exercise. So obviously, because they're so big, basically, they're obviously going to tire. And you also have increased risk of injury if they have accidents on the farm. And obviously we need to take care of, they're such large animals that we need to take care of safety on the farm as well, that they don't end up crushing anybody. Then skip a line, calving difficulties are a common problem. And then skip a line, cesarean section is commonly carried out to deliver the calf, an additional workload and cost, as well as welfare issues with this breed. Okay, so that's just basically what I was saying, that, you know, although you have the advantage of this animal having a large amount of meat, the disadvantage of it is that you're going to have a cesarean when they're born. That means you're going to have to pay a vet, but also you have to keep an eye on her when it comes to her recovery period. Okay, the next thing then is the performance and progeny testing. We've already been through that when we went through the plant section, the plant genetics chapter. Now we've also been through genotyping, but this makes reference to it specifically with animals. So mark the first thing, we've already mentioned it, genomics. It's the study of an animal's DNA. Scientists use genomics to study genes that control important traits such as milk production and carcass weights in animals. And then the bottom of the page, some of the advantages of genotyping include to check the parentage of the animal, for traceability of meat, to identify stolen stock, and for breed transparency, to identify whether an animal is a purebred beef animal or a crossbred beef breed. So the idea in this is basically that we can check an animal's genome, which is basically like a list of all their genetics, a list of every gene that's in their body. And then that helps to us to identify, for example, the parents that they had, the lineage that they had, the traceability of meat. So if there was an outbreak of a disease, now we have the farm to fork, so it's fully traceable. But if it wasn't, you could check using the DNA to see was it related to the infected case. Obviously, if there's stock that's stolen, that's quite a common thing at the moment. If they've removed the ear tags off the animal, you can still check using their DNA because obviously you'd be able to identify who their parents were. And breed transparency, obviously, if an animal is being sold as purebred, you can check genetically to make sure that it is. On the top of the next page, then, the second bullet point, mark that as well, to identify animals that are carriers of lethal genes or congenital defects. So this is an important one. This is basically saying if an animal has something wrong with it, okay, that is a major issue, we can check its genotype to see whether they have the gene or not. The idea being if they have the gene, we don't need to continue on to breed that animal, because then it's just going to replicate in the further years. So it would just end up having more animals. The next generation would also have the lethal gene. So we can check, we can genetically test the animal to see do they have a specific gene and then not select them for the next generation. And then skip the next point, but you can mark the following one, to predict the potential genetic merit of an animal from a very young age. So the idea in this, usually we have to wait until an animal's a certain size or a certain age until you can actually see the benefits that the animal has. Whereas if we can just check their genome, we can see at a very young age. So therefore, if we were selecting ones for replacement, we could select them at a young age. Okay. Mark then on the right-hand side of the page a lethal gene, which is a gene that would cause the animal to die, and a congenital defect is a birth defect. So that's when we were talking about basically identifying, does the animal have this? And if so, not using them for reproduction. Okay, the next thing then is genomic selection. The idea of this, it was only recently introduced into Ireland. You're looking at roughly 2009. You can mark this second paragraph down. Genomic selection, and then skip across. Introduced into Ireland in 2009. The objective was to identify how sections of an animal's DNA affected a range of important animal traits, such as growth rates, fertility, and milk production. The genotypes of these animals were then compared with the performance records. So the idea here was to basically identify certain genes that would have been important. So genes like the animal's fertility or their milk quality or their milk quantity. And then you can identify whether that's present in each one of the other animals and compare and contrast them. Okay, so the idea again that we select a certain gene that's going to be used and then we'll be able to identify if that's in the offspring. And then use that offspring to for breeding purposes so that we produce lots more of them. Okay, natural selection then is the next thing. Natural selection is basically where the body does this of its own accord. Okay, so if you think for a second about a litter of pups being born, if those pups are born out in a farm or out in the wild, let's say, and there is 10 pups, not all of those 10 are going to survive. And what's going to identify which ones survive and which ones don't survive is based on whether they are strong enough to fight to get in to get their milk. Okay, so it's basically nature's way of selecting the stronger ones and separating them out from the weaker ones. The idea being then that the weaker ones aren't going to have access to the milk and they will die off. Now, although it's a harsh way of doing it, it basically means that the weaker animals will die and then they're not going to survive to breed to produce more weak animals. So in a weird way, it's actually nature's way of ensuring that the fittest survive. You might have heard that phrase, survival of the fittest. That basically means that only animals that have like adaptations to make them hardier or stronger or better able to adapt. Now that could be in terms of having more muscle, or it could be something like having a thicker fur that would enable them to survive if it was very cold. That's basically an adaptation so that they will naturally survive and then they'll be the ones to go on and reproduce. As opposed to if it was a weaker animal, let's say the runt of the litter, we don't necessarily want their genetics to carry on into the next generation because they're obviously weak genetics. And so what we do instead of that, they'll die out. Now, this only works when we're talking about nature. Obviously, when we're talking about humans or even when we're talking about humans owning animals, we wouldn't leave that happen. We'd nurse them on, or we might bottle feed them, or we might give them injections of whatever it is they needed. So natural selection is very much talking about out in nature. Okay. So mark on page 339 under natural selection. It's the process whereby organisms better adapted to their environment tend to survive and produce more offspring. And then on to the next page. So the next thing that they're talking about is basically lethal genes. So a lethal gene, if it's present, it's going to cause the death of an organism. It's the reason why the likes of a miscarriage, which is what we call it in humans, or when we talk about a miscarriage in animals, we refer to it as an abortion. We say that the animal was aborted. So that's basically meaning that the animal passed away and was excreted from the female's body. Okay, one of the reasons why that happens in the animal world is the presence of what's called a lethal gene. So this is just a gene that basically will kill the organism. But we say that these lethal genes are what's called self-limiting because the fact that they're there means that they'll kill the organism and therefore that gene can't go on in the next generation. Do we understand that? So a lethal gene, if it's present, it kills the organism. And that in itself means that it's self-containing or self-limiting, because if it didn't kill the organism, it would be far more common. Okay, so about halfway down the page on 340, underneath the diagram of the cows, skip down five lines and then mark lethal genes are self-limiting. Organisms that inherit two copies of the gene cannot pass them on to their offspring, thereby removing these genes from the population. As these animals have inherited variations that do not enable them to adapt better to their environment, they are removed by natural selection. And then skip to the next paragraph and underline, there's one example of natural selection in Irish agriculture that is a cause of concern, the development of antimicrobial resistance. Now I'm going to explain what that is. So some of this, ye probably have some of this. If you've ever been to a doctor, they've given you an antibiotic. You took it for a few days, but it made no difference. And then you went back to the doctor and they prescribed you a different antibiotic. That means that you were basically resistant to the first antibiotic that they gave you. Now, what that means is your body has had that antibiotic before and it has been clever and figured out how to fight against the antibiotic. And so the next time you take it, then the body isn't going to have the same benefit from it. So the bacteria won't be killed off by the antibiotic. Okay? That's fine when it's just one antibiotic, but when it's a number of antibiotics all together, then it becomes an issue. So you'll hear, like in the hospitals, you'll hear people having MRSA and then the hospital being closed to visitors or whatever for a number of weeks. The reason behind that is basically we have no cure for it. So if you get it, there is no way around it. You're going to die from that infection. Now, how does this all happen? Like, how do people become resistant to antibiotics? It's basically the misuse of antibiotics. So if it says on the packet to take it for a week, but after 4 or 5 days you feel better and you stop taking it, that's misuse. Or if, for example, it says to take one a day and you take one every second day, that's misuse. Or equally, if you get an antibiotic every time you have a little bit of a sniffle or a little bit of a cold, it's misuse and the body will learn how to fight against those antibiotics. Okay. So just before the blue box at the bottom of 340, underline change in ways that make the medication used to cure infections, they cause ineffective. Microorganisms that are resistant to most medications are commonly referred to as superbugs. So you'd hear MRSA being referred to as a superbug. Then mark the definition of it, the ability of a microorganism to grow in the presence of a drug, an antibiotic that would normally kill it or limit its growth. And then mark underneath it, it's caused by the inappropriate use of medicines. So what used to happen on farms, especially things like with hens, we used to just pump antibiotics into them. So they'd have a little sprinkle of antibiotics with most of their meals. But we know now that we can't do that anymore because they were developing this antibiotic resistance. And so now what we're doing is we're putting more focus on the hygiene on the farm to avoid the infection. Okay, so top of the next page, third or fourth line down, in order to stem the rise of antimicrobial resistance, farmers are working to reduce the incidence of infection and disease by maintaining good hygiene levels on the farm, effective ventilation, because obviously you need any fresh air to be constantly passing through so disease won't be building up, having a vaccination program, maintaining biosecurity, and administering antibiotics only when needed. So this is something that's a pretty big deal now. It's something that we are quite worried about globally. They're trying to make an antibiotic that would have an effect on bugs like MRSA. But it's something that we need to develop more awareness about. So not misusing antibiotics, only taking them when it's absolutely necessary, and finishing the dose completely. So what I want you to do now is read through the exercise on 341, 342 and answer the questions on 343. So this will give you an idea of the applied genetics type questions that could come up.